The Transatlantic Soccer Podcast is powered by AmherstWire.com, the digital first student-run magazine of UMass Amherst. Check out the site for more content. Hello guys, this is the Transatlantic Soccer Podcast. I'm Jacob Robson. I'm joined by Alejandro Winslow and Joshua Crespo. This is our maiden voyage. First podcast, boys. How are we feeling? How was our weekends?
I'm feeling good. Just, you know, excited to get into it. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, ready to talk about some football.
Let's get into it. Well, obviously, we're going to review a first few weekends games, talking points. We've obviously got Manchester United versus Arsenal on the agenda last night. Pretty boring game, I'd say. And then Juve, a bit of a Juve coverage, 2-0 win against Spal, and then obviously the Madrid derby. But let's talk about UMass men's soccer closer to home. They were 4-1 first five games of the season, but unfortunately lost four games on the bounce as of late. Josh, what have you got to say about UMass men's soccer?
So this past weekend they traveled to Dayton to open up Atlantic 10 conference play. And they unfortunately lost to Dayton 2-0. Not a great result, but a close game. And they have no mid-game weeks. They're just preparing for the next conference game this Saturday, October 5th at 1 p.m. They're going to be playing against St. Louis at Rudd Field.
Good, cool. So good luck to Coach O'Leary and the boys. We'll be keeping a close eye on them for sure. Let's get straight into it. Premier League talk. Manchester United versus Arsenal, 1-1 draw. Sloppy game, poor from both sides. Did you guys watch it?
Yeah, I watched.
Yeah. As an Arsenal fan, it was kind of a tough game to watch. What did you think, Jake?
Not much to say. Apart from absolutely woeful, both sides. I mean, I think United had the best. The first half was United's and then the second half was Arsenal's, but it wasn't really much to talk about. There was not many things to speak highly of. There's no praise. I mean, firstly, I think Solskjaer has definitely put his job in jeopardy right now. He's risked Marcus Rashford and Paul Pogba, who have seemed to have aggravated their injuries. Rashford looks like a guy who's shot of confidence right now. He hasn't got any he hasn't got the prowess or the nous to get into the scoring positions that we've seen of him for the last couple of years. Paul Pogba looked a complete shadow of a man that he was in the World Cup and, you know, previous seasons before that. He's not putting any confidence into Mason Greenwood. He's 17 years old. He clearly deserves a start after scoring 2-2 in his first two games. I don't know what else to say. And there's obviously Pereira and Jesse Lingard. They haven't done anything in the first 7-8 games of this season.
It's just tough to watch both these teams play now from the levels that they used to compete at. And you look at like the players in the team, and you think that except a few that they should be competing week in, week out for the top four. But it's like their star players don't put in the performances that they really should be in these games. And I don't know if it's on both sides. And I don't know if it's a coaching thing or they need to refresh the squads or sell on their big names and use those funds to buy different players. But it's kind of ridiculous to watch how far these teams have fallen.
I think that this game was basically a perfect summary of the moment at both United and Arsenal. Mm-hmm. I think they're both clubs that, you know, in the past have been great, but right now, just whatever it is, you know, both of the teams aren't in Champions League anymore. And both of the squads actually look pretty slim, you know. I know Arsenal has been having some injuries. Lacazette has been out. As you mentioned, Pogba and Rashford, not looking 100% for United. And both teams just need to find a way to get their season back on track, especially United, who, you know, are in 10th place now, I believe. Mm-hmm. And,
Are we looking at two sides that obviously were once huge rivals because of the, I mean, I think they still are, you know, there's an argument there to, for them to still be the top two biggest clubs in English football, regardless of success. But are we looking at two clubs that could potentially decline into mid-table, or do you think it's just the, I know it's not, it's been 6-7 years for Man United and probably Arsenal as well, but is it a minor blip, or should we, are we expected to see them climb the table soon or no?
Well, at least for Arsenal, I think that probably the same for United too. I think that there needs to be a change in kind of how the club is structured and run, and in the board, and possibly managerial too, but I think it's kind of deeper than that. At least Arsenal, I think our method of spending is poor. I think we cash out too much on big name offensive, you know, attacking players that we don't really have a team to build behind them with. And I think it ends up just a recipe for disaster when you splash out on these players like Pepe, who, you know, is obviously a quality player, but is either not getting the service, or when he's not playing well, it looks even worse because we're relying on him even more. I mean, Aubameyang's a different story. He's been playing really well, but
he's carrying the team right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that there needs to be a change in how we look to kind of recruit in the transfer market.
I think that Pepe is a very good player. I think he came in, and especially in the game against Liverpool, there was that whole you know, thing where Van Dijk had never gotten dribbled, and then we finally saw someone dribble past him. He showed speed, he showed tenacity. But lately he's been, you know, especially in the United game, I remember there was one play where he got the ball right inside the box, and instead of taking a touch, and you know, he tried to shoot it first time and he just absolutely skied it. So I think with Pepe, there needs to be a little bit more of patience as the season goes on. I think he'll get into it. I think he'll start working better with the players around his squad. I don't think it's necessarily fair to go on right ahead and say that, you know, he's a flop, that they spent too much money on him. I think give him a bit of time and he'll do better.
I mean, as a Man United fan, I love it when Arsenal, new Arsenal signings, you know, flop and stuff. I was calling him the Jovino 2.0 yesterday.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter.
Nicolas Pepe, obviously, it's only been first seven games, eight games of the season. Long way to go yet. Hopefully he does prove his price tag, because I was one guy during the summer, I was the one of the guys that was wanting Nicolas Pepe at Man United. So United now 10th with 9 points, Arsenal with 4th with 12 points. Not a huge gap in points, but a huge gap in the table. Where do we see them both ending up in the at the end of the season?
I think that the top four, in my opinion, is going to be not in any order, but just I think the top three spots are locked in between Liverpool, City, and Spurs. And I think that clubs like Chelsea, United, Arsenal, and even Leicester, who's been off to a great start, are all going to be in a dogfight for that fourth position. And if I was to give a very early prediction, I would say that I think Arsenal would end up with that fourth spot.
Okay.
I think as an Arsenal fan, again, obviously I want us to finish higher than fourth maybe once, but I think aiming for fourth isn't a bad start. And I think with kind of the form that Aubameyang's in, I think he's going to keep, you know, getting us results week in, week out.
Well, this brings us nicely onto our next topic of discussion. Leicester 5, Newcastle United 0. Leicester now up to third, as we just said. Vardy looking sharp. I mean, I think for me, I love the way Leicester play. I've always loved the club. It's such a humble club, such a good club on great foundations. Like I said, strength all over in all areas. Got Ricardo Pereira, who I think is one of the top three right backs in the league. Yeah. Jamie Vardy, who consistently bangs in the goals. James Maddison, a great young talent. And then they've replaced Harry Maguire with Soyuncu, the Turkish centre back, who looks a solid, solid player. This is my contender for top four, and I think Leicester have slightly got the edge over Arsenal and even Chelsea and Tottenham right now. Tottenham look shaky. Pochettino's having problems there. I'd definitely put Leicester top four for me.
I think that like this team, like they seem to have like found an identity after
definitely
ushering in Brendan Rodgers, and it seems like they come out every game and they're fired up and they want to win, and they attack and they really press teams, and I think it's really good to watch them playing now after they had done so poorly now for the past, was it, two seasons? So I think it's really great, and I think I could easily see them finishing in maybe in fourth, but easily in the top six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Leicester, they've been surprising a lot of people this season. They have a really good team. I know you mentioned Ricardo Pereira, and that goal he scored, the opener, that was an amazing goal off his weak foot. Indeed. He basically ran the length of the whole pitch and finished it off. It was a great goal. And I think that, you know, obviously Leicester is a team that, you know, a lot of neutrals cheered for back when they won the Premier League, and then they had that opportunity in the Champions League, which they actually didn't do too bad in. But then after that season, after they won the Premier League, they kind of were on a decline. But now, as you guys mentioned with Brendan Rodgers, it seems like they're finding their identity, and they're making the right moves. You know, they were very stingy in the sale of Maguire. They made United overpay for him 100%. A lot. 80, the most expensive defender ever. He was never worth that.
But they
knew that United needed a center back, and that they would pay that much, but just how desperate they were. So I think that the club is being run very well. You know, obviously, unfortunately, they did have their owner die in that helicopter accident. But even, you know, the people who took on after him, they're still doing the right things behind the scenes. And doing that will result in good things happening on the pitch.
100%. And like you said, both you said the identity, they're getting the identity back. I felt watching the game against Newcastle, the atmosphere around the stadium was kind of similar to what Ranieri's Leicester had when, you know, they went on that amazing run. Obviously, it's early days yet, but they still had that identity, that it's like a fortress almost. And I feel like Manchester City, Liverpool will be scared to play at the King Power Stadium this season, 100%. And one statistic that I saw over the weekend is Brendan Rodgers, since his arrival, I believe it was in February of last year. He's had the third most points since his arrival. It's only second to Liverpool and City. So that obviously shows the progression under him that Leicester have made so far. And hopefully, there's plenty more good times to come for Leicester. So, Josh, let's move on to your team, Juventus.
Yep.
2-0 against Spal. What are your thoughts on that one?
I think that the story with Juventus this whole season has been that, to me personally, they just look like the same team they looked like last year. You know, at the beginning of the season, they got rid of Allegri, who had been there for many years, won a lot of domestic titles with them. And they brought in Maurizio Sarri, who is known for playing an offensive brand of football. They were looking for a change in the style of play. And to be honest, I haven't seen it at all. You know, it just looks like Allegri never left, honestly. They're just scrapping away for wins, 1-0, 2-0 wins. And they, you know, I know it's early, and I know that you need to give time to the manager, but, you know, it's frustrating at the beginning of the season not seeing any significant improvements.
What do you think about Aaron Ramsey? Obviously, going from the Premier League, which is obviously one of the toughest leagues in the world, to the Serie A, which is notoriously very dependent on kind of technical players and, you know, such and things like that. How well do you think he's fit into this Juventus side?
I think that the past two games he's gotten a start. Sarri went away from the 4-3-3, which he started the season off. He went to the 4-4-2 diamond, and Ramsey was playing at that 10 position, you know, just having that freedom. And I think he looked really, really good both games. He got his first goal last weekend against Hellas Verona, and he continued to impress. And I think that he was exactly what Juve lacked. Last season, they were always lacking that one creative spark in the midfield. With Pjanic, you know, he just sat deep and controlled the game, and Matuidi was a bit of an engine. But then that third midfielder, they would rotate between Betancourt or Emre Can or Khedira, who, you know, didn't provide what the team needed. And Ramsey was that exact player that they needed. And I hope to see him keep on starting as we move forward.
Were you surprised when Juventus announced Ramsey was signing on the free transfer?
Honestly, yes, I was. I didn't expect him to come over to the Serie A, but he said that he wanted to compete for titles. That's why he let his contract run out. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he's doing well, so I'm happy.
I mean, he's certainly getting a good pay packet out of it. Is it $300,000 a week?
Absolutely, yeah. Because everything that Juve didn't pay for him in the transfer fee, they're giving it to him in a salary. Yeah, basically, so
you can't moan about that if you're Aaron Ramsey, that's for sure. Ronaldo and Dybala. Let's talk about those two, because obviously Ronaldo 34 years old now.
Yep.
Paulo Dybala was linked heavily with a move either to Manchester United or elsewhere in the summer transfer window, but that didn't go to plan. Paulo Dybala and Ronaldo, are they two players that can actually play together? Because we saw them link up for their Juventus' second goal at the weekend. Do they actually have some chemistry, or is it just a one-off?
I think that they definitely can play together. I don't see any reason why two phenomenal players can't be on the pitch at the same time, unless they play the same position, which is definitely not the case. Mm-hmm. Ronaldo's a winger slash striker, and Dybala is like a second striker attacking mid. I think that last season we saw that they didn't play much together because Allegri wasn't a huge fan of playing Dybala on the right wing, which I don't think he can play. I don't think he has enough speed to play on that right wing, but especially in a formation like Sarri is using now, the 4-4-2 diamond, he can play right in that 10 position, right behind Ronaldo, feeding him the ball. And like you said, they connected. He got an assist off a cross to him. Ronaldo headed it home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a matter that they can't play together. I think that they just need to be put in the same, in a system where both of them can fit.
Right. Yeah.
Quick question, Josh, but do you think Dybala will still be sold on at the end of this season? Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, if I was him, I would have already had left in the summer. You know, he said that he loved the club so much and that he wanted to stay, and I respect that, especially as a fan. But just the way that the club was constantly trying to push him out, you know, they didn't hide it at all. They really wanted the deal with Manchester United to go through, and the only reason it didn't go through was because Dybala, you know, he started asking for too much money, and then the same thing happened. You know, they accepted a bid of $70 million
mm-hmm.
from Spurs, which is ridiculous because, yep, honestly, in today's market, how can you pay more for Harry Maguire than you're going to pay for Dybala?
Exactly.
Absolutely, yeah.
So if I was him, I would have felt disrespected, but he made the choice to stay at the club. And he's going to have to prove his worth now. I think he's started off at a good season. But honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he is sold next window, just because the management haven't, you know, they haven't hidden the fact that they want to cash out on him, that they want to move away from him.
I mean, if this is the season that Juve finally do get that Champions League win, then maybe it's a good decision by him to stay, and might actually boost his transfer value. So
agreed, yeah.
We'll see. Also, I recognize in the starting 11 on the weekend for Juventus, Sarri decided to play Cuadrado right back and left back was Matuidi.
Yeah.
Why?
So, Juve's management, as much as they've been doing some good things in the past, like bringing in Ronaldo, they obviously won the race to get De Ligt this season as well, but they have made a lot of bad mistakes, one of them being getting rid of João Cancelo, who, in my opinion, on his day last season, he was one of the best fullbacks in all of Europe, just going up and down the flanks with so much pace. Sometimes he would have some mental lapse defensively, but they got rid of him because financial reasons. They wanted to cut back on salary and they wanted to make some money. So they gave him to City, and City gave them $30 million plus Danilo. And they were banking on Danilo and Decilio, who are both very injury prone. So both of them are actually out injured right now, and Alexandro's father actually recently passed away, so he went back to Brazil for, you know, the funeral and everything, so that's why he was out of the side. So then he also had Matuidi playing at left back. because when they got rid of Spinazzola, who was another left back that they had, they sold him to Roma. They got Luca Pellegrini, who's a 19-year-old prospect, but they loaned him out. So the squad in itself only has three fullbacks. So, I mean, I don't really know what they're doing there. And honestly, it can really hurt them, because as good as Cuadrado is, you know, bursting up the flanks like a fullback usually does, he can be such a liability defensively.
Yeah, that's poor management right there by the hierarchy of Juventus. And let's go on to Scudetto challengers, the Serie A title, who I think, I think Inter Milan have certified challengers for this. They're looking obviously unbeaten right now, six games, six wins, 18 points. Conte looks like he's built up a very, very solid side. Obviously, got the acquisitions of Lukaku, Sanchez on loan. I think Inter Milan, possible contenders.
Well, I love when a club goes out and does what Inter's done and kind of pick up the scraps from other teams that that they don't want, because the Premier League is just such a fast-paced league, and it's obvious that players such as, you know, Lukaku and Sanchez have an incredible amount of quality, but sometimes either their bodies slow down or they don't play. They're not able to keep the intensity that they need for the Premier League to kind of have success. So when they come to these leagues, which are a little slower paced, they can really do really, really well. And so I think it's great to see that Conte's signings have paid off, and that these, you know, once world beater kind of players are now really competing week in, week out, and doing really well.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's also just a change of scenery can help. You know, sometimes the fans can get a bit toxic, as you know, sometimes that happened with both Sanchez and Lukaku. But besides both of those, they also made a lot of signings. They got Diego Godin for free.
Yeah, I was going to bring that one up.
Madrid, who's been a rock at the back for them. And they've made two midfield signings, Stefano Sensi and Nicolò Barella.
I love Nicolò Barella.
Who are two awesome players. And honestly, Sensi has been, in my opinion, the best player for Inter by far. I don't know if you guys watch much of him playing, but he's just been phenomenal for them, just a maestro in the midfield for them. And I think they definitely are contenders. I think that when you bring in a coach like Conte, the same thing we saw at Chelsea, he came in and he won the Premier League in his first season. He's a coach that gets you results right away, that he makes the team play the way that he wants right away. He doesn't really have that adjustment period, and I think we can see that. I mean, it is early. They might still have their bumps, but they've gone off to a great start, and I think you wouldn't be crazy if you said that they could win it this year.
I think Conte's had a history through, obviously, he managed Juventus, Chelsea, recent memory, and now Inter. He's had a history of having the big man up front, Lukaku, obviously now Inter, Diego Costa at Chelsea, and was it Higuain at Juventus?
No,
Mandzukic.
He had a bunch of different
ones.
He had like Marco Vucinic, he had Fabio Quagliarella.
Oh, Quagliarella.
He had a bunch of players that, you know, he when he was at Juve, they say that he was the one who could, you know, like, he could just get a bunch of crappy players and just make them into good players. He even had a joke, Jaccherini, who played for Juve with him, and then he would always call him up to the national squad. And there was a joke that when he played under Conte, he would be Jaccherino, because he's just, you know, he's able to get the best out of some players who aren't necessarily technically gifted.
Yeah, and I remember, he didn't have Graziano Pello at Italy, right?
He did.
Was a, you know, Southampton striker, wasn't, you know, Southampton weren't terrible at the time, but he definitely wasn't a world beater, and he was there to make the system work.
He also had Fernando Llorente, who's another just big striker
there,
running the balls down at Juve.
Definitely the blueprint right there for Conte, and it seems to work. Obviously, he's enjoyed success wherever he's gone. So so obviously this weekend, Sunday, October 6th, Inter Juventus, we finally get the answer. Who's going to be the top dog, or somewhat of the answer?
Yeah, it's going to be a big game for both teams. You know, contrary to what a lot of people think, Juve's biggest rival is Inter. It's not Torino. It's not like a local derby. They call it Derby dell'Italia, because you know, they're the two, not necessarily biggest clubs, but they just have a lot of hatred in between them in terms of, you know, competition off and off the field as well. So it's going to be a big game.
Well, let's move on to La Liga, because it's heating up in more ways than one. Obviously, Real Madrid haven't had the success that we thought they would after their transfer spending. Let's talk about Atletico, the Madrid derby, Atletico 0, Real Madrid 0. Real Madrid are still top after this game, but are they top on merit or are they top on luck?
I mean, I think they've gotten lucky. They've had a lot of draws. They've been conceding an incredible amount of goals. I think it's kind of a little surprising to see how poorly they've been doing with the quality of the side. But I think, you know, watching the team play, you can see obviously that there's a lot of problems. As much as a fan of Luka Modric as I am, he hasn't been playing great. The defense hasn't been playing great. But they're still managing to somehow stay top of La Liga, and maybe that's down to the other teams not being as competitive as they should be. But
yeah, I think that's a big part in it as well. Not only like Barcelona have not had a good start to the season. You know, they've been missing Messi. He's been picking up some injuries. Suarez picked up a little bit of an injury, and there's just been a lot of things going on with Barcelona, which I know we'll talk about in a bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that the poor start that other teams have had has also allowed Madrid to kind of slide up and keep up there at the top.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk Real Madrid for a little bit. Eden Hazard, obviously the golden boy that we thought he would be, is in his prime right now, 27, 28 years old. He's yet to score or record an assist in his first 5-6 games for Real Madrid. He's only managed 4 shots. Zidane is actually being very patient with him right now. I think quoting this weekend that they have to wait for him to be the player that they know he can be. So, which is, he's defending Hazard right there. Came into preseason a little bit overweight, obviously, and he's always been that kind of player that's had that body type of, you know, having kind of probably not the most muscle, but a little bit of, you know, fat to get him around, you know, the fullbacks and stuff. And he's obviously notoriously got a massive, massive ass as well. So, he's got that body type for sure. Hazard, should we be worried about him declining, or is it just a minor blip?
I think we definitely should be worried about it, because the form he finished last season with has not carried over to this season at all. Is it a matter of time, adapting to a new league, living in a new country? That could be it. But I think that his drop-off has been so drastic, because honestly, in my opinion, when he ended the season with Chelsea, he had his best statistical season in terms of goals and assists.
Mm-hmm.
He was flying in the Europa League towards the end, because he didn't play much towards the beginning, but especially in that final against Arsenal.
Yep.
And honestly, he was looking as if he was the best player in the world besides Messi and Ronaldo. And now all of a sudden, he doesn't look the same.
No, and despite the woes of Real Madrid, they did control possession of the weekend, 56%. Real Madrid had 4 shots, I believe only 3 on target. I could ask the question, is Zidane finally getting his side playing, but is it too early, too soon? Just one or two games that they have won.
I think it's too early. You know, again, it can't be understated how poor they've been playing defensively. And it seems that Zidane is almost wanting them to play more defensively than they have been in the past. I think, well, I wouldn't say it's the club's identity. I think Real Madrid has always been a really fast-paced, counter-attacking style, where they, you know, they get into transition and they score goals. They got, you know, fast wingers, and they have the ball-playing midfielders. But from the looks of it, it's just not what he should be trying to get his side. The style that he's trying to get them to play should not be trying to get them to play like that.
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit early, and obviously they have plenty of time, and Zidane's obviously an incredible manager, and again, all the players in the team are great, but I wouldn't say that they're playing at the the speed and quality that they should be.
I think one important thing to note too is that when Zidane had all that success with Real Madrid, you know, winning all those Champions League and whatnot, that was a while ago, and I think he has a really aging squad. You look at some of the players like Luka Modric, mm-hmm. Sergio Ramos, Marcelo,
yeah.
A lot of key players in the team have, you know, just aged on, and they have done it a bit with signings of players like Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like Ceballos, who they had, who's a quality midfielder, you know, he never really got a shot in, and they loaned him out. Maybe they'll bring him in, but they haven't shown many signs of, you know, trying to buy a lot of younger players. You know, over the summer they did splash a lot, but then we're still going to have to see. You know, I feel like we haven't seen much of Luka Jovic, mm-hmm. and Mendy, you know, and Rodrigo, like I said, and Vinicius Jr., who obviously was having a great season last year, and then he got that ankle injury,
yeah.
and he's still, you know, trying to get back into the squad.
Yeah. Another club in internal turmoil, I'd say. Barcelona, they still did get the win at the weekend, a 2-0 win away to Getafe. Suarez came back, he scored, but he could be gone in the summer. He's aging now, he's 32. He's had multiple poor performances lately. This is probably a decline of one of the world's best strikers, right?
It's kind of upsetting to watch. Honestly, I mean, Suarez on his day could almost single-handedly rip teams apart.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll never forget what he did to PSG in the Champions League a few seasons ago. Backheeling it over Jerome Boateng and nutmegging David Luiz, scoring incredible goals, but it's kind of sad to see. I think he lost that kind of little yard of pace that he had. He's never been the fastest, but you know, all the time I'll see him when he plays now just dribbling into traffic and losing the ball,
mm-hmm.
and then following the center back from behind. And it's just kind of upsetting. And I think that I really think he needs to be replaced, especially with, you know, Messi slowing down a little bit. I think they need to bring in either another superstar or just a new striker to replace Luis Suarez.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Suarez, you know, I think he's still a quality player. But I know that even with Messi, there's been a lot of talks about David Beckham's new team in the MLS,
yep.
Inter Miami FC. And I don't think Messi will end up going there. But I think that Suarez is another one of those players, you know, he's been picking up a couple of injuries, he's aging a bit, that he might be like, oh, you know, maybe I'll cash out a bit, go
yeah.
play MLS, enjoy life in Miami.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I know the main players, the main figures in that dressing room, Barca, that we know, we talk about Suarez, talk about Messi, we talk about Pique, those kind of players. They've had some off the field kind of troubles with the board, especially after the Neymar no deal. Messi even went to the press, I think, just before the start of the season, he was unsure that the club did all they could do to sign Neymar. But is Neymar now being missed? Is this what we're seeing right now? Is Neymar the player that they actually need right now? Or is it just a big name that was once there and not anymore?
I don't think they necessarily needed Neymar, but obviously getting someone like Neymar wouldn't hurt. He's a world-class talent.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see he's been off to a great start for PSG. So I don't think it was necessarily in terms of really needing him or not, because I still do think that they have some players there like Dembele, who has injury issues, but when he's playing, he's phenomenal. And they have that new 16-year-old, Ansu Fati, I believe his
yep.
name is, who started playing well. So I think that it's not necessarily, oh, they didn't get Neymar, that's why they're struggling. I think it's just more of a, I don't know, Messi is key in that team, and he has been picking up a lot of injuries. You know, it seems like his age might be catching up to him a bit, and we'll see if they can get out of it, the lump that they're in.
Yeah,
I think I wouldn't say that Neymar was needed. I think that Neymar, a player of his caliber, should have been brought into the club this season. I think as great of a player as Griezmann is, I think he is much more of a link up and kind of being involved in you know, the final third, but I wouldn't say he's much of a finisher or even necessarily the chief kind of creator. And I think that with the kind of how the team's set up right now, he's looking kind of like a luxury without if we're missing Messi and we're missing Suarez to injuries. I think they needed another superstar to kind of allow Griezmann to work in behind. Yeah. And so I just think that until they get a player of that style, I don't think Griezmann will be able to kind of put up the numbers that the Barcelona fans really want him to.
Yeah, and then after also the game against Getafe, Gerard Piqué was quoted to have a few off the field troubles with the board, saying that players have too much power in the club. We know how the club works, he said. We know who writes the articles, even though they don't sign their names. But this believed to be the board behind this Mundo Deportivo story. He also, in the same kind of dates, kind of also criticised the pre-season plans, which they went to Japan and the US, which is obviously a lot of travelling for pre-season preparations. Is this a club in turmoil, or is it just a kind of a blip in terms of... Because what I'm seeing here is it's coinciding with the downfall and of Barca and Real, but then the upscale kind of gradual progress of Liverpool and Man City, which Liverpool and Man City have probably got two of the most strongest squads in world football right now, especially City. So I believe maybe are we seeing an overlap, like an overtake of these two teams, or these well four teams and these two great nations?
I could definitely see that. I think that you know, Barca's not immune to you know, inter conflicts within the club, but I can see how kind of the changing of the guard per se with mm-hmm. these you know, incredible talents who are kind of aging, and the spines of these teams kind of not playing as well as they used to, and also aging. I would say that these teams like City and Liverpool, who their squad is for the majority of younger or more in prime age players, they just have these incredibly filled benches with all very talented players, and so I would definitely agree that I could see Liverpool and City kind of overtaking Real and Barcelona as these the top two clubs in the world.
I think that you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid are such historic clubs. I think that it would be hard for anyone to take them over just like that. Just, you know, I feel like it would be something. You know, obviously Manchester City and Liverpool probably right now in the moment are two better clubs than in terms of results and playing than Real Madrid and Barcelona. But I think saying that either of them will, you know, kind of take over, because, you know, Barcelona and Real Madrid are the two biggest clubs. They have the most money.
Mm-hmm.
They're both very, you know, they have a lot of history in terms of titles and everything. But, you know, the Premier League nowadays is just, you know, with the TV money coming in, you know, even the lower end clubs in the Premier League, if you look at it, they're making big signings. They're spending a lot of money, teams that are just getting promoted into the Premier League. But the names Real Madrid and Barcelona have so much pull that a lot of people grow up wanting to play for those clubs.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But, you know, so we go on from Barca and we think about Real Madrid. Let's just have a little quick prediction of the table come May. Barcelona, Atletico, Real Madrid are the front runners. Who do we see on top?
I'm going to go... Well, this is a tough one because, you know, obviously both Real and Barca are having this, you know, a shaky start to the season, and Atletico is, you know, made a lot of signings over the summer themselves. But I'd say Barcelona will get back to first place, followed by Madrid, and then Atletico in third.
All right. What about you, Alejandro?
I would probably agree with that. I think Atletico does have a good squad this season, and I think they could make a push, but I would also just have to imagine that the pure quality in Barcelona and Real will kind of push them ahead of Atletico.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go against both of you. I think Atletico are going to get the Liga title. I've been in love with Diego Simeone and the way he treats players, the way he gets the best out of players, the way he sets his team up. You know, especially he's got notorious run for going to places like the Nou Camp, like Santiago Bernabeu, and getting results time and time again with not even the best players. I remember having a 32-year-old Fernando Torres going there and scoring two goals against Real. So I am going to go for Diego Simeone's Atletico Madrid to grab the title. I think Joao Felix is a great signing, no matter the age. He's 19 years old and they paid over 100 million euros for him, but I think that's really, really good deal for the way he's playing and how he's performed the first few games of the season. So let's move on to the final segment of this maiden voyage podcast. We're going to call it Podcast Picks, boys. We've got four games for this weekend's vast array of fixtures. First game up, we're going to keep scores on this throughout the season. First game up, Liverpool versus Leicester City. What are your guys' thoughts and why?
I'm going to go with a 2-0 win for Liverpool. I think that Anfield is just a fortress, one of the hardest places to play, and I think they're just going to, you know, continue rolling. It's going to be a tight game. They're not going to run away with it. But I think that Liverpool is just going to be that little bit too good for Leicester to get a draw or a win.
I have it going down 1-1. I think that this Leicester team is looking really good, and I just think that they're going to come into the game strong, and obviously I'm not a huge Liverpool fan as a Arsenal supporter, so mm-hmm. I really am hoping that they start getting some poor results soon. So I'd love to see Leicester go and take a draw out of this.
Yeah, cool. I see it going 2-1 to Liverpool. I think it's going to be a tight game. Liverpool obviously have a midweek Champions League game, but you know, I think they've got not the greatest squad depth, but they've got some squad depth where they could rotate. They're only playing Red Bull Salzburg, so they could field a somewhat weakened team. Leicester will be rested, though. Brendan Rodgers will send his team out to, you know, defend from the start and play probably a counter-attacking football, organised football, and hopefully they could get something out of the game. I do see them scoring, but I do think Liverpool at Anfield, very tough place to go for any team. 2-1 victory for the men in red of Liverpool. Newcastle versus Manchester United. Josh, what do you think?
I'm going to go with a 1-0 win for United. I think that Newcastle is another example of one of those clubs that just internally has been run so poorly.
Yeah.
So many people have asked the owner to sell the club. And over this weekend, I actually saw a video when they were getting smashed 5-0 by yeah. Leicester. Their fans were still singing in full voice in the away end. So they do have a lot of passionate fans, and it's, you know, it's sad to see a team because they were once up there, you know, kind of like a team like Leicester is now, a team yeah. that would give trouble to the bigger clubs in England. But I think they're just being, you know, they're really in a battle to not fall again, not get relegated, and I think that Manchester United will be able to pull away a win.
Yeah. Alejandro, what do you think?
I have the game going as 2-0 to United. I think Newcastle is pretty awful. I don't think Manchester United is much better, but I think with the players that Manchester United have, I think that they can score at least two goals and hold Newcastle to none.
Okay, I'm going for a draw actually for my own team. I think Newcastle, despite their woes, despite the off-field, you know, off-field kind of comedic elements that are in the boardroom, I think St. James's Park, along with Anfield, and one of those kind of stadiums, is one of the toughest places to go when the Newcastle fans are in full voice. Manchester United typically had a good record away to Newcastle, but the way we are right now, Rashford probably won't play, Pogba probably won't play, we'll probably go there, set up and play Mason Greenwood, and Daniel James and probably Lingard again, and I just don't think that's threatening enough when you look at any the front three of any other team that we should be competing against. So I think Newcastle might be resilient at home. Hopefully Steve Bruce sets them up to be resilient, and I do believe, I think 1-1 is a fair score, and that's what will happen. So Manchester City versus Wolves, probably an easier game to predict. Josh, what have you got for that one?
I'm going with a 3-1 win for Manchester City. I think Wolves are actually a very decent side.
Indeed, yeah.
They have a lot of good players like Diogo Jota, Ruben Neves. They just got Patrick Coutinho from Milan, so they do have some good players. But, the same way I said that Leicester, Liverpool are going to be just that little bit too good for them, I think City will be, just that little bit too good for Wolves. But I don't think it'll be a runaway win like they had against Watford, anything crazy.
Okay.
I said 3-0 to City. I think this is arguably the best team in the world. And I just think that they'll be regularly killing these types of teams. As good of a team as Wolves is, I think that it'll be a pretty easy win.
Cool. I'm going to go 4-0 to Manchester City at home. Place is a fortress. Wolves have a Thursday night Europa League game. City have played today, actually, Tuesday. So they have a few extra days of rest. They also have an incredible squad depth, so they could rotate whoever they want and still probably field a very, very strong 11. Wolves have obviously struggled with the fixture congestion, which is probably why they're not doing as well this season as opposed to last season when they finished 7th. So, yeah, 4-0 to Manchester City is my prediction. And let's go to the Derby d'Italia. Did I say that right? Josh, let's go.
So I'm predicting a 2-1 win for Inter. I think that I just think that they're that little bit ahead of Juve right now, and Juve, like I said, still trying to find their way, still trying to find how they're gonna play, still trying to find how they're gonna be set up, who's the ideal starting 11. There's been a lot of rotation, whereas Inter are just, they know who their best 11 is. They've had a great start to the season, and above all that, the game is at the San Siro too. And I think they're just going to pull away with a win.
I have it going down 2-2. I think it'll be a really good game, a really physical game with a lot of big guys out on the field. And I just think that both teams will probably nick in 2 goals and probably leave it at that.
I agree with you. 2-2. I've gone with Inter do look legitimate. They do look like a legitimate contender for the Scudetto. Conte, as I said before, has a great system in place. Lukaku is not firing on all cylinders just yet, but he's looking sharper than he was under Solskjaer and Mourinho. Although I do think the Barcelona game in midweek, which is, I believe, Wednesday, could play a factor into how well Inter are rested, and Juve's game today could also have played a factor, so we will see. But I've gone 2-2. Will be a top game at San Siro. I'm definitely going to tune in to watch it on Sunday evening. So yeah, that is it, boys. Any last thoughts, comments?
No, just enjoyed it. Can't wait for next week.
Me too.
Absolutely.
So thank you for listening. This has been the Transatlantic Soccer Podcast. We will come at you every Thursday with new content. And let's look forward to the rest of the season.